Thank you. Can we move on then to paper number four? And Raghavan's going to tee it up for us, I think.
Yep. The potential implementation issue in this paper is about the requirement and the standard that an entity should use the principles for determining the transaction price for ascertaining the future cash flows for impairment testing of capitalized contract costs. So the issue is, does the use of principles for determining transaction price mean that an entity cannot consider expected cash flows during contract renewal or extension periods? Essentially because the standard for the purpose of measuring transaction price for revenue recognition prohibits an entity from assuming extensions and renewals. Now the staff is aware of two views. One view is that the requirement is looked at narrowly as to restrict the entity from assuming any renewals and extensions even for impairment testing purposes, which means that the entity may have to immediately impair the asset to the extent the asset is not recoverable. The other view is that the standard sets out the boundary for impairment testing by requiring an entity to consider the goods and services to which the asset relates. And if the asset relates to the goods and services to be transferred during the renewal periods, then the entity will essentially consider the expected future cash flows during the renewal periods as well for impairment testing purposes. The basis for conclusions as well state that the objective for impairment testing is essentially different from the objective for measurement of revenue for revenue recognition purposes. So now over to the TRG members as to what are your views about the potential implementation issue, and are you aware of any other interpretations on this issue which are not included in this paper, and any other related issues that you're aware of?
You want to take it over there first, Jim?
Sure. Perspectives here. Mark or Allison, I guess she beat you to it, Mark, sorry.
I'm going to have the same view as her.
Just
we thought view two.
Mark?
We're view two.
That'd have been funny if you'd been view one after.
Yeah. We just always assumed that was it. When you read the words, I guess you could potentially get the view one, but that just doesn't make any sense at all to us. So.
Others here? See General Head nodding here, Ian.
Okay, thank you. Views here. Andrew.
I'll just agree with everyone else, also view two. I think that if you look at the wording that appears contradictory, you could also read it to say that you need to be consistent during the period that has been used for the purposes of revenue recognition. And therefore, for the contractual period you've got, when you're looking at impairment, during that period, your revenue assumptions need to be consistent. It's just when you're doing impairment, you extend for a further period. I didn't have a particular problem getting to view two very quickly, though.
Okay. James, you...
I agree entirely. It seemed to me to be clear from the words that was the intent.
Gosh. Brian?
Similarly, I was on view two. I just had one other observation. I think this is the shortest impairment test I've seen in any accounting standards, so my compliments for that.
Can we find somebody who disagrees? View two.
Ian, we have one card up here. Yeah. Russell?
Yeah, I agree with this view two. One question that I have, if we're going to clarify this guidance, I'd like to maybe think about expanding it a little bit. The guidance that the contract or transaction price should assume that the contract wouldn't be canceled, renewed, or modified, I think has some other implications that I'm concerned about. In particular, how it interacts with variable consideration and the constraint. So I'm thinking about a long-term contract that's accounted for over time, where you've got a contract asset that's developed because your revenues exceeded your billings. And just concerned about sort of the interaction of this literature here, you know, part of me says, do you want to you could just model in the contract the existing terms of the contract through the end of the contract, but if there's concerns about termination or if there's concerns about modifications that come in the form of price reductions such that you wouldn't recover your contract asset, wouldn't you want to consider that? And couldn't you consider that as part of your variable consideration determinations or maybe the constraint? But I'm concerned that the guidance that says you shouldn't consider cancellations or renewals or modifications when you come up with your transaction price would conflict with the idea of doing that. So I'd like to see, and I can provide some examples if it would be helpful, but I'd like, if we make some clarifications in this area, that's one clarification that I would like to see as well.
Okay. I think if you, and it might be helpful if you could provide that the staff with just a couple of those examples.
Sure. Sure.
I'm just curious. I mean, it may not be the moment, but I just wonder, I mean, if the view is so clear on what we've got, whether there is need for more clarifications. I mean, on the basis that one's trying to avoid lengthening rather than anything else, the amount of clarification work here. I mean, it would seem to me we got to a pretty unanimous view of what the view was, so whether one actually wants to have clarifications for things that are pretty clear, I wonder.
Yeah. The question, it seems to be there is a consensus among preparers, auditors, users. The question I would ask, is there any board member who doesn't feel comfortable on this side of the Atlantic with this conclusion? Personally, I don't.
You feel comfortable.
I am comfortable. So, I mean, if everyone is comfortable, including board members, then probably there is sufficient consensus so that we don't need to issue it.
I think that's where we're heading. I don't know. Jim, any further final comments from your end?
Anything else on this, Jay? I don't have anything more on this issue, but before we wrap up, I'd like to just pose a couple more questions about the output after this, but nothing more on this issue.
Okay, well, I think we have complete issue. I wish they were all as easy as that. Jim, you've got a question over there on process and whatnot. You might like to take that forward, and then we could open up the same sort of questions here.
Okay. Just a general question. When you described up front the next steps, and I realize this is a piece of clay that you're trying to figure it out, and you've got a long ways to go, especially with this first one, do you think it's possible that you'll have something relative to whatever you're going to prepare as a result of this by the time of our next meeting in October, so that you might gather some reaction from the group, even if it's preliminary at that point? Because maybe a suggestion that would be very helpful if there was something for us to react to before the next meeting.
That's what we hope to do. Now, sometimes that reaction or update at the next meeting might be a status update, meaning we don't have anything to tell you, but it's still in play. But we do hope to be able to come back after each meeting at the beginning or end or sometime during that meeting or perhaps even before, say, here's what we heard and here's the intended steps, either no action or it continues to be an issue or we think there's education needed, but we do want to update the group.
Mark?
Just one other question. I know you mentioned this at the beginning, and I don't know how it's going to become transparent on what the issues are that are on this committee, but I think as transparent as you can be as to what's, I don't know whether you go as far as what the EITF does and there's some kind of agenda, a formal something published, but we get the question, or I get the question, and I know my colleagues do, and I'm sure the other firms at least and maybe others are getting what's on this committee's agenda, what are they considering, what issues have gone there that have been rejected. I don't know how we do that, but somehow we got to be able to let people know that this issue was discussed and nothing was changed, or this issue was brought forth and it was never put on the agenda. And I think that that latter part is important, because if someone's expecting this committee to take care of something in the future, but it's already been rejected, that needs to be known. So I don't know how we do that, but I know it's a question I get all the time.
You know, we've been talking about that internally as well, and we're still sorting out some of the details. But I think at a minimum, from a committee's perspective, we do plan from time to time to let you know what issues are in the pipeline, if you will, for future meetings, so that you can start to think about them. But I will use the opportunity to say that, you know, we really haven't had a significant volume of submissions. Not that we're necessarily asking for a volume of submissions, but you know, we haven't really had a lot of issues heretofore, but that certainly will become something that we'll need to think about as we progress.
We'll be happy to help with that.
And what, so with that in mind, one of the difficulties, I think, transparency, you're right, Mark, is important, but there may be issues submitted that the staff looks through and says, this is maybe a less sophisticated submitter of the issue in terms of having gone through the detailed standard. I think Colin described that as potentially saying, hey, we're happy to take that in terms of pointing people to, you know, paragraph, you know, whatever is directly on point, and we don't want to stifle people sending those types of issues if we can be helpful, but then them thinking it gets reported up to some other level. So I think there will be some level of us saying this wasn't really even an interpretive issue. There were things directly on point. So we're sorting through how do we best provide that transparency.
And just to be clear, I think it's just to be fair to everyone that's not on this committee, making sure that they know. I mean, I making it confidential amongst us is probably not ideal, because then they'll call and somehow it's just like, oh, well, here's what's on there, and I'm not really supposed to tell you. But I to make it just, in my mind, transparent for everyone, to be fair to every other entity and company and firm that's not on this committee, what's being, I don't know how you do that. I know it's a big task, but.
And if you are the submitter of an issue, I think there's, you know, whether it makes it up or not, or it's one the staff can say, look, this is sort of directly addressed already, there will be direct, you know, it's not like they're going to go into a black box. The staff will work directly with the submitter.
Yeah, okay. I
think Mark makes a very good point, and I think we need to be as open and as transparent as we can be, and we're going to work together to work out how to do that. Are there any questions at this end or comments that people would like to make?
Ian, can I just confirm an understanding in terms of clarifying what people who are observing the meeting may walk away with? I had assumed, but want to check, that the papers for today's meeting, not just the agenda, but the papers supporting the agenda, were posted and publicly available?
Yes, they are.
That's correct. So Mark, in terms of your issue, somebody could see what's scheduled to be discussed, could observe the meeting. I think the question is about the reporting what followed up action, and if that's in the public meeting, that will also be in the public domain. And the question really is about the pipeline that has not made it to the agenda for the next meeting, and so it'll, yes, be what we're sitting with in inventory when
and
we publish.
Things that have been rejected as well. Yeah. I mean, it's a good point.
Yeah.
And I think, as I said at the outset, as Sue mentioned, you know, that's something that we want to, yeah, develop, is some way of reporting. So then that gives transparency to, you know, mm-hmm, the issues that have not been dealt with that have come in, and also the issues that we're not actually going to sort of particularly do anything with.
Yeah. But presumably, to the extent somebody's saying, what have you discussed, you know, what has the resource group discussed, or what is the resource group planning to discuss at the meeting you've got scheduled in a couple weeks' time, that's all transparent to the public.
Yeah. Yes, yeah. I mean, we've got the stuff up on the website, yes. I think probably not that long after it was actually, yeah, sent to the, yeah, to the committee.
Yeah, and that's the intention going forward. I was going to say, in summing up, that, you know, we've had a good day and I think a good discussion, but this is our first hurdle. We've got over that. There's a lot of things that we still have to work out, exactly how they fall into place and how we report them, and how we, you know, take things on board, and we'll work through that as we go. But I think we successfully discussed, I think, four reasonably good issues, and had a good discussion. We'll try and work out what our conclusion, if any, is out of those discussions. And we take this final point that we've got to continue to be completely transparent and open with what's going on. And this isn't a secret society. Everything we do, I think, will be on the public record. So hopefully we'll keep these people happy and keep your clients and associates happy. Jim, did you want to say anything? Finish up?
Agree with you, Ian. I think it was a good discussion, and I think the range of issues were, you know, these were the right types of issues to be bringing forward, and ranged from, I think, since Scott, you observed this at the break, ranged from maybe a potential issue, as people said, wasn't clear in the drafting, to, you know, a pre-existing issue in how people apply the standard of revenue recognition today, and maybe an issue where the change is causing uncertainty in practice. So the right range of issues. And I think each of the participants, both here and in London, for your willingness to participate today and participate going forward.
Good. Well, thank you very much. And I think with that, we'll call the meeting to a close. Thank you.